Today is August 5th, 2026. This is your FinTech briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 minutes, we'll cover the Fed's abrupt removal of forward guidance under Chair Kevin Warsh, a credit complex now worth trillions, sitting atop a record debt-to-GDP ratio, and the first direct yen intervention by the U.S. since 1998. The most consequential shift in market structure this week isn't a rate move, it's the absence of one. Jesse Felder of the Felder Report points out that new Fed Chair Kevin Warsh has pulled forward guidance without ever clarifying what the central bank's reaction function actually is now. That matters enormously for anyone modeling duration risk. The Taylor Rule, a standard reference for where policy rates should sit given inflation and growth, implies a funds rate above 6%. The actual target range sits at 3.5 to 3.75%. Felder puts a number on that gap. The Fed is behind the curve by as much as 300 basis points. Looking at the regulatory landscape here, removing forward guidance is being framed by Felder as a deliberate move to reduce moral hazard after the Silicon Valley Bank collapse, where duration bets made under transitory inflation guidance turned catastrophic. But there's a cost to that ambiguity. Bank asset liability committees can no longer rely on a clearly signaled path, which means duration assumptions across the industry need retesting right now, not next quarter. Compounding this, the bond market's term premium, which sat dormant and even negative before the pandemic, is climbing again. That directly raises borrowing costs and increases the valuation sensitivity of anything rate exposed. Nominal GDP grew over 7% annualized last quarter, a pace Felder argues simply doesn't square with how accommodative policy still looks on paper. The broader fintech pattern here is one of leverage stacking on top of leverage, and Michael Pento of Pento Portfolio Strategies has put granular numbers behind it. He tallies $1.6 trillion in private credit, $1.4 trillion in CLOs, and $1.5 trillion in junk bonds. Morgan Stanley now projects $570 billion in AI-related debt issuance in 2026 alone. That's not a peripheral figure. It signals that a meaningful share of next year's private credit and structured debt supply will be directly tied to AI infrastructure build-out, which is exactly the kind of exposure fintech lenders and credit-focused allocators need to track as a leverage proxy. All of that sits on top of a $40 trillion national debt, which Pento calculates at 123% of GDP and 720% of federal revenue. For context, debt to GDP sat near 60% at the onset of the prior two U.S. recessions. More importantly, that structural gap means fiscal policy now has dramatically less room to backstop the next downturn than it did going into either of the last two. Felder separately flags a fiscal deficit running around 6% of GDP during an economic expansion, historically an unusual condition tied to roughly $2 trillion in new Treasury issuance annually. If you want a picture of how quickly leveraged, thesis-driven capital can unwind, look at what happened with the AI infrastructure trade this summer. A fund built around the thesis that AI lab compute demand predictably picks winning supply chain investments had generated roughly 20 times returns the prior year and was up more than double this year. Then a soft IPO from Korean chipmaker SK Hynix weighed on sentiment. A Citadel note anticipating a Fed rate hike raised the cost of capital for risk on AI trades, and a margin call followed. Citadel ended up acquiring that entire public equities book at a discount, generating an estimated $3 to $4 billion in value within a single trading day. The broader fintech pattern here is that AI thesis capital is still flowing in at scale, but leverage is amplifying downside velocity the moment selling pressure hits. And that's a dynamic that maps directly onto the $570 billion AI debt issuance figure Pento's citing for next year. On monetary mechanics specifically, Pento notes the Fed's balance sheet has actually grown by roughly $38 billion since Warsh was sworn in back in May, despite Warsh's stated commitment to the 2% inflation target. Pento argues that target realistically requires balance sheet contraction toward what he calls a scarce reserve regime, and Warsh has so far proposed only a task force or symposium next year with no confirmed compliance timeline. For scale, the balance sheet sat near $800 billion before the Great Recession, peaked near $9 trillion, and sits just below $7 trillion today. Looking at the regulatory landscape internationally, the more structurally significant development is currency intervention. Economic historian Philip Magnus, in a discussion via Kitco, confirms the U.S. has joined Japan in directly buying yen for the first time since 1998. This reactivates exchange stabilization fund style intervention capacity that traces all the way back to the 1933 to 1934 gold revaluation, when the official gold price rose from $20.67 to $35 an ounce, roughly a 69% increase, producing a roughly 41% official dollar devaluation and a treasury revaluation gain of about $2.8 billion, $2 billion of which seeded a currency intervention fund that Magnus says still exists today. The broader fintech pattern here is that cross-border settlement infrastructure, dormant for decades, is being reactivated in real time, with direct implications for treasury market functioning. Felder adds that Japanese government bond yields look 1 to 200 basis points too low, given Japan's debt-to-GDP ratio exceeding 200%, and Bank of Japan treasury sales to fund yen defense are mechanically pressuring U.S. yields higher.
There's a separate unverified claim circulating that the New York Fed's FEMA repo facility, which lets foreign central banks post treasuries for dollars without outright sales, is being used by the Bank of Japan, with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent reportedly seeking to expand its roughly $60 billion per central bank limit. That's worth flagging precisely because it's unverified against primary Fed documentation. Treasury and liquidity teams should confirm directly before building it into cross-border stress scenarios.
FinTech thesis update. What changed today is the risk calculus around duration and credit. A Fed without forward guidance, a term premium that's waking up, and a credit complex measured in the trillions sitting on top of the most fragile fiscal position in decades. That combination raises the probability that the next credit cycle turn arrives with less policy runway to absorb it. The countersignal worth watching is unlevered infrastructure positioning, exemplified by Apple's local inference chip strategy, which offers an alternative to leverage-dependent AI trading exposure. Watching the rails. Until tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.